Wondery Plus subscribers can listen to 10% Happier early and ad-free right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
From ABC, this is the 10% Happier podcast. I'm Dan Harris. So, yeah, I'm supposed to be this like evangelist for mindfulness and meditation and everything. But if I'm being honest, one of my favorite, absolute favorite things to do in the world is to sit with my wife and turn my brain off and watch a lot of television. In fact, this is super pathetic, but here's what we did last New Year's Eve. After we got our varmint to go to bed, which took a while, we put on matching sweatsuit onesies, which we got from Tori Smith over at Tori Johnson, rather, over at GMA, ate cookies and watched 5 hours of Making a Murderer. That was New Year's at the Harris household. Anyway, one of our favorite shows in recent years has been Boardwalk Empire, which aired on HBO. And one of our favorite characters on that show was Dodder Maitland, the 20s jazz singer who is incredibly talented, beautiful, mysterious, confident, and wounded all at once. And then recently I found out that the woman who plays Dodder Maitland, whose name is Margot Bingham, is a meditator. So here she is, sitting right in front of me.
Here I am.
Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for that intro.
It's my pleasure.
It's a pretty heavy one. Oh, well, New Year's Eve, Making a Murderer, huh?
Yeah, it was not the most relaxing way. I mean, it was relaxing physically, but not psychologically.
Right.
Did you watch
that? Imagine. No, I tried to stay out of it when we were filming for the most part.
Oh, right.
And right now I'm just trying to catch up with everything else, my House of Cards and the Happy Valleys of the world. And
Happy Valley, I'm obsessed with.
Obsessed with. Please don't tell me anything.
I'm not going to tell you anything.
I didn't even know that there was a second season until like 2 months ago,
the
and
best
I freaked
news
out.
Ever.
It honestly, like I was screaming, and it was crazy.
Sarah Lancashire, the star. We're way off topic here,
totally.
But I'm just going to go with
That's
it.
Fine.
Sarah Lancashire, the star of that,
yes.
Is
fantastic.
A ferociously talented individual.
Fantastic. And that's, I mean, I can't speak enough about her. She was so inspiring to me as Nina Meyer on The Family for ABC. I mean, there was everything about
she's
her.
She's on The Family?
No, she's not. But she,
oh,
like,
for Nina Meyer,
so
for your
I watched,
character
so I watched that gotcha. Before
Sorry.
We went into the yes. pilot last year.
I forgot that Nina Meyer is the name. I should say this because I didn't say this. Nina Meyer is the name of your character on the ABC show The Family, which
yes.
is what you're doing now.
Yes, which is what is airing now
right
on ABC.
Now.
Yes. But no, she's fantastic. Everything that she was, it wasn't your typical procedural cop kind of officer thing. She shares so much about her family. She's so personal and open, and yet she's so tough, but mm-hmm. she's not guarded. She's magical to me.
She really is. And there's moments where she just flashes a look and you just like see this feral look in her eye.
Yes.
But then you know also that she's incredibly compassionate.
Right.
And
she's terrified. She's just
yes,
terrified.
And terrifying.
Mm-hmm.
We should, because many of our listeners and viewers probably have no idea what Happy Valley is. It airs on, it's a BBC, a joint production with BBC that airs.
BBC and Netflix.
And Netflix.
Yeah.
It airs on Netflix here, or air, I don't know if airs is probably not the right word, whatever. It's available on
it's
Netflix.
Avail.
And
yeah.
it's in its second season and it's completely brilliant.
Right.
But anyway, we're here to talk about you. So I want to ask you a million like geeky questions about Boardwalk Empire, but I'm going to hold off on that because tell me about meditation. When did you start meditating and how and why?
I think I started meditating, I'd say probably 3 years ago. For the most part, I try to be as holistic as possible, and I do a lot of the natural homeopathic ways of kind of gearing back to my health. And I've really been on that road strongly for 3 years. I'm recently a vegetarian 3 years ago. I guess that's not so recent, but time flies. And I was getting tired all the time and always lethargic after my meals. So I went in and saw an endocrinologist, got my blood type tested, and he was like, I really recommend this book, Eat Right for Your Blood Type. And I thought, okay, well, I guess I'll check it out. And I knew I was A positive, so I got the Dr. D'Amo book. And A positive blood types are gardeners. We're not supposed to be eating heavy meat. And really, turkey is kind of on the neutral list. I don't know if you're familiar with this book.
No.
I'm sure you are.
I've heard about the idea of using blood type as a true north for your
Dan, it's
diet.
Phenomenal.
Really?
I highly, highly recommend. It's one of those things that you open the page and it says all of the things that you can't eat. And you're like, well, I'm sure I could. And then there's like a thing that's in the neutral and it says why and what makes happen in your body, and you're just kind of like, oh my god, that's actually what happens to my body. That's so weird. Like, could this really be a thing? So there were a couple things on the neutral list, like turkey, ground turkey, but I am an extremist to the fullest. So, which works professionally, but not so much for my personal. And I literally just went cold turkey, no pun intended, and cut it out. And the next day I didn't eat meat ever again. I just couldn't do the like chicken sometimes, meat sometimes, and then do a bite of turkey. I couldn't kind of do that and juggle. But after that, I really felt a lot lighter. I felt better. I never felt tired after my meals. And then I started getting into a little bit more into the yoga practice and or practice of yoga and acupuncture and more of just like a very clean lifestyle. And that came with meditation, obviously, with the stress of the career that I chose, which I can't complain about because I chose this and this is my dream.
You're in a safe place. You can complain as much as you want here.
Thank you
my
very
friend.
Much. Oh my God. But I definitely have moments where I feel really stressed out, and my anxiety is not the best at times. And the people closest to me know that and know how bad I get. And the best thing that I could possibly do is really take a second to myself and gather my thoughts and get in the best mind frame that I possibly can. As far as patients dealing with directors or different egos in this industry, you know that it comes at a high risk, and there's many different personalities in this world that we live in and that is our everyday. So we have to kind of go in with the best gear and tools that we can and weapons. And I think that the best weapons that you can have is patience and meditation.
Who's the most difficult famous person you've ever dealt with?
Ooh,
I'm kidding. You don't have to answer that. That was a total joke.
It was a trick. I almost fell for it too.
I would love to know the answer, but I don't want to ruin your
Maybe
career
offer.
Right now. What kind of meditation? How did you find it?
So I'm a huge fan of Oprah and a huge fan of Deepak. I used to listen to music when I would fall asleep as a baby. It was just something that had to be on or else I couldn't fall asleep. And I think because of my musical ear, that was just something that caught me and that I had to have. But then it turned into more meditation music, more spa music, more Reiki and more chakra music. And then I started getting my parents into that a little bit more. So now like their nightly regimen is turning on like the chakra for the heart, or you know, like
your dad is the former linebacker for the
Pittsburgh
Steelers.
Yes, he is, and now he listens to Reiki meditation every night, so he's definitely getting his Reiki on. But yeah, they both love it. It's very relaxing music, and I guess once you get into once you get into really allowing your mind to open up at night. And you can just easily, it's not so easy at first, obviously. You have to really release all the stress and all of the things that you list daily and that are continuously going on in your mind and really relax. But once you do get to that relaxation point, it's magical what you can feel when you really allow that music to kind of set in for the rest of the night. And you can get an unbelievable sleep. But it's the trick of getting there. So I would really get into Oprah, and then Oprah has the 21-day meditation challenges with Deepak. And I would send that out to my friends, as I still do. And it's challenging to commit to 21 days. It's unbelievable how challenging it could be to just commit to 15, 20 minutes of your time. For their meditations, it's 21 minutes, for the most part, rounded to 22 because of the 21-day meditation challenge. But it's great because Deepak really guides you through it and then allows you to kind of take over, and Oprah kind of gives an overall idea of where you should be at that particular time, or just like an example of setting your mind, and then Deepak can set your intention. So that's really nice. Something that I personally struggle with still is really setting the right intention, becoming really simplistic in my intention and just being pure and just kind of keeping it very simple. It's really hard to not go into a meditation with like the idea of, okay, this is all that I have to do in this meditation in this 15 minutes. I don't have any other 15 minutes to myself. So this is like, I need to cover all bases.
Or I've got to get as calm as humanly possible.
Right.
Stat.
Right. Which you don't. It's just a daily thing.
The worst thing you can bring to the meditation party is expectations. It will
Absolutely.
Screw everything up.
And that is a personal struggle that I deal with constantly. So that's actually where I am right now. Me and my guy just started getting into Headspace, which is something new that I haven't been familiar with, because I've been doing it for a little bit and he just started doing it. So he likes more of the guided route. And that's cool, because that's something that I struggle with anyways. So I kind of like to try all different types. I just am a huge fan of taking 10 to 15 minutes to yourself, regardless. If you call that meditation, cool. If you call that like a moment of silence, cool. I just think that it's really great for our minds, especially people that are working more than 9 to 5s and that aren't really allowed to turn off their phones and computers at the end of the night. My mom is one of them and she's watching right now. So yes, I'm talking about you, mother. And it's important to take time for yourself, because nobody else can give you that time back. So that's kind of that's where I started knowing that I needed to do that.
So let's just drill down a little bit. When you were doing the Deepak meditations, sometimes people get nervous when I talk about Deepak because I make fun of him in my book a little bit, but I actually really like Deepak, and the kind of meditation he teaches is completely legit. It's this mantra meditation.
Right.
I assume that's what he's doing with...
That's what he does.
So you take a word, it can be any word really, and just repeat it silently to yourself on the in-breath and the out-breath.
Right.
And did you find that that worked for you?
It does. But I do have to say, if my intention doesn't match the word for the mantra is out the window. I really don't remember it. Even in like the 5 seconds that he says it, he could say, you know, love, love, love. And I'm like, what? You know, and I just like kind of space out. But that's, again, concentration on my part that needs to do better. But I like it because it kind of breaks down the intention a little bit more clearly. And again, it's getting back to the simplistic way of thinking, which is something that I need to work on. But I definitely, I take that kind of idea into my acting world, because as an actor, you should, there's something that my teacher, actually a couple of my teachers have taught me, that you should have an objective to go into a scene or whatever. And that's something that you just know as an actor, that that's something that you learn. You walk into a scene or a room with your objective. And I've always had a hard time breaking down my objective. I can tell you exactly what I'm going to do in the scene, but that's not really your objective. So if you can't break it down to the word or the simplest form, then you don't really get to where you're going. Mm-hmm. You eventually do, but you go this really far roundabout way. So that's something that I actually enjoy on his part, but I just think that some of the words don't always match the intentions that I need.
So this is going to expose my own ignorance, because I've never done the Oprah Deepak 21-Day Challenge.
Totally.
Talk to me about the relationship between the intention or whatever that is and the mantra. Just walk me through in super basic terms.
So say we're talking about choosing your happiest life, you know? That's like the theme of the whole 21-Day Challenge, is choosing your happiest life. And you go into the meditation with Oprah starting out the meditation, and she'll talk about her personal story about saying, I don't know, this is totally not an example, so I'm just making this up, so please don't quote me on this.
Duly noted.
But she'll go into it and she'll say, you know, I remember when I was working in a radio station and I wasn't happy with myself and I needed to change. I needed something more. And everything that I walked into, it just wasn't enough. And I needed something more. So I looked inside of myself and inside of my heart and realized that it wasn't the things that I needed to fill it. It was the beauty inside of me and finding happiness within myself. So she'll start with something like that. And then she'll say the intention, then it will go over to Deepak. It will fade out with a beautiful musical chime. And then it will go into Deepak and he'll say, you know, the intention for yourself today is to know the beauty inside of yourself. And then he'll repeat a word and he'll just say like intention or love, 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 or beauty.
And you will then use that silently to repeat to yourself love as you breathe in and love as you breathe
out. Yes.
But sometimes there's a disconnect in your mind between what the intention is and the word, and then that's where you get a little...
Well, it's just sometimes I wouldn't have chosen that word, but maybe it's because I just can't get there directly yet.
Here's a hack.
Okay.
ignore the word, just use whatever word you want, because it really doesn't matter.
I mean, I guess if you have like if you have the idea and you have the space where you're putting yourself, I guess it doesn't matter.
The point is to you're basically just giving your mind and your brain a break, because when you get concentrated enough on the combination of your breath and the word, then all of the nasty Margot thoughts quiet down. They'll come back, and then you'll notice that you've got distracted, and you'll start again and again and again. You'll have to just do that over and over a million times. But eventually, you get good enough so that you may have a couple seconds at a time where Margot's not there anymore. You're just feeling the mantra and your breath, and that's the point. And so it really doesn't matter what word you choose. At least I'm a little bit out of my lane here, because I'm not a this is not the kind of meditation that I do. But having read enough about it, I think it doesn't matter what word you pick.
I agree with you. I mean, unfortunately, this is kind of the only I'm starting to learn about other meditations, because a couple of my friends don't like the style of the challenge and they like different kinds of things. So again, getting into headspace and different kinds of ways of meditating, I'm starting to learn that too. So there's definitely some ignorance on my end as far as other types of meditation. But I just think that it's important to do regardless, and I try to practice it as much as I can. I'm definitely not good at it, so I won't go on about how amazing I am.
Well, anybody who tells you they're good at meditation, you should be really suspicious, because it's not like chess or doing, you know, juggling or something like that.
Sure.
It's so counterintuitive for type A people like the two of us, because you shouldn't go into meditation thinking you're going to win. It's really about the failure, which is getting distracted and then starting over. That is success.
Right.
And that is really hard for people like us to kind of to bake into our expectations.
What, to let
going
go?
Into it. Correct.
No
exactly.
way.
Exactly. Well said. Well said. So Headspace, just for those who don't know, is a really popular and terrific app that teaches people how to meditate. So you've been using that a little bit as well?
We're starting to get into it.
This is you and your boyfriend?
This is me and my boyfriend, yeah.
Okay, so you're starting to get into that.
Starting to get into it, yeah.
I love Headspace. I think it's great. And the guy, Andy, the voice you hear,
yes.
Is a guy I've spent a little bit of time with. He's a fantastic
really?
Guy. But yes, he's really cool. And the real deal, he was a monk for 10 years, so he actually really knows what he's talking about.
Oh, wow.
But there's another app.
Okay.
It's called 10% Happier, and you should check that one out. Yes, that one. She's pointing at a sign that says 10%
happier. 10%
happier. I will arrange it so that you can taste test that and see what you think as well.
I love it.
So the whole goal of this of my app is to like do it with a little bit of sense of humor.
Okay.
Because I'm a wise ass. So right. And I think
that's
my
perfect for my guy.
My suspicion is, especially for men, but for a lot of women too, that if you deliver this without pan flutes and without, you know, any talk about chakras, none of which bothers you, but for some people it's like a turnoff, that if you deliver it in that way, that you open the door for other people who, you know, might reflexively reject it.
Okay, perfect.
Anyway, I'll hook you up with
that. I love it. Great.
So let me ask you about acting stuff, because your story is phenomenal. So you grew up in Pittsburgh.
I did.
Your dad's a former linebacker.
Yes.
And your mom does what? She is a really
She's a real estate agent.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you went to a performing arts high school, and then talk to me a little bit about what happened after that, because then it was pretty quick. You kind of like got pretty big, pretty fast. So what happened in the interim?
Yeah, I guess, so I went to CAPA in Pittsburgh, Creative and Performing Arts High School. It's still there. It's in downtown Pittsburgh, and graduated, then went to Point Park University for 2 years. And then I did not graduate. I left school. I was on full scholarship and working a lot of jobs, and I was not really doing very well at school at the time because I was juggling so much. And then I was still touring a lot with my music in Pittsburgh and doing like a lot of opening acts and everything for nationals that would come into town. And
National acts as far
as music acts. At the time, I was like more in the pop R&B world with my music. So I did like the Nelly Furtados of the world, or like Wale's, or Black Eyed Peas, or whatever. So I was doing that while I was in school full time, and I just wasn't. Something had to give. So I talked to my mentor, my teacher, and at Point Park, and she was like, you know, Margo, we study to make people work. We that's what we give you, the tools to work. And I was like, I know. She's like, well, you're working, sweetie. And I was like, I know, but school is important to me and it's very important to my family. And she was like, just try it for a year. My parents agreed. And they gave me 1 year in New York, and they were like, you have to do something.
He went from Pittsburgh to New York.
To New York. At the time, I was touring with Jason Mraz, so I moved when I was 20, I think, to New York City. And I was touring still a little bit, so I kind of had a couple months here where I was in and out. And my parents just kind of gave me 1 year to get things done, whatever that meant, just make something happen. I didn't really have any friends here. I didn't know anyone here. My dad had one contact here. My family lives in Connecticut, so I did have people close, and obviously Pittsburgh is really not that far. But I really was completely alone, and I just had to figure it out. So I did. So I kept doing open calls, and I found one for Rent on Playbill, and they were having like a last minute open call. So I went in.
It's like the off Broadway revival of Rent.
Yeah. So I went in around 6:30 in the morning. It was at 9 o'clock call, and I made it past the first four typeouts, which is basically when they just walk down the line and just say like no, yes, no, yes.
Oh, you're not the right type.
Yeah. Just it's what a type out is. And it honestly, it could probably be an intern. It could probably be like a student that's just walking down the line.
Wow.
Not even casting yet. Like you don't even get in the room with casting.
This is just brutal.
It's pretty brutal.
This is why I can see why you're attracted to meditation, because
this
world is harsh.
It's pretty harsh. So I made it past the first four type outs and then got in the door and then sang my eight bars, which for any musician, you know, it's like, it's literally like, and then it stops. And that's like, that's pretty much like, and it's like, got it, nailed it. Nope, didn't. So I made it past the eight bars and then I got to the 16 bars and then there were like six auditions that day. And then I think I auditioned nine times for Rent and then I got it. Yeah. But I was the only one in the company that came from the open call, and I was number 719.
Wow.
And there were still hundreds of people behind me. So it's pretty incredible to think that that's kind of how my career started, was through that. And then I got an agent off of that, and then Rent closed, and then I was unemployed for 8 or 9 months.
Whoa.
And which is always scary as an artist. And I was getting nervous that nothing was going to come back or come up, and I needed to kind of look for my plan B again. And then I got the call to go in for Boardwalk, and they were looking for just a jazz singer in the background for like a day player role or something. And a lot of my friends went in. We were all the same type, you know, light-skinned brown girls with jazzy voices, and that was us. And so we all went in, and I was like, yeah, I could sing some jazz. And went in, sang the song St. Louis Blues, which I ended up singing on the season later on in the season, around like six in the season. So that was full circle. So I sang my audition song on the show, which is pretty cool. And I got the audition. I think it might have been 9 callbacks for that as well, maybe 8 or 9 callbacks. And that was out at the Navy Yard. And at the time I was living in
the Navy Yard here in New York.
In Brooklyn.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I was kind of schlepping back and forth every once in a while. And it was about an hour and a half to get there and then an hour and a half back. So every time that I would go there, I was like, oh man, I really hope this is the last time. And then I would get another call back and I'm like, oh, I got to go back out again. But this is what I wanted.
Stressing me out even just hearing the story.
It's totally, yeah, it was definitely stressful. But then I got it and then they kept calling me back. And I don't think that that was anything that anybody expected, for sure.
As they say at Amica, empathy is our best policy. Whether you need auto, home, or life insurance, they're ready to help you protect the things that matter most to you. They're a mutual company, customer-owned, in service to you. Amica representatives are here when you need them, and you can take comfort knowing a real person will be there on the phone to take care of you, because the greatest measure of their success is your satisfaction. You can count on T-Mobile to help keep you connected. After investing billions to light up their network from big cities to small towns, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, when you switch to T-Mobile,
Families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus Verizon and AT&T. Visit your neighborhood store or T-Mobile.com to switch. Plan savings with T-Mobile, third line free on essentials via monthly bill credits versus comparable available plans. Plan features may vary. Credits stop if you cancel or change plans.
So just to step back just a second, because I'm worried that I may have insufficiently explained what Boardwalk Empire was for those who don't know what it, who never watched it. But it was this show, as I mentioned, on HBO. Steve Buscemi was the lead. It's no longer on. It had its finale about a year ago.
A couple years ago.
Gosh, shows you how I've lost conceptions of time.
No, it's, trust me, it's the same thing.
But it was a great critically acclaimed show set in like 1910s and 20s.
1920s, yeah.
1920s. Mm-hmm. And it, Steve Buscemi's basically a local mobster, but it brings in all sorts of crime, politics,
bootlegging.
Arts, bootlegging, race relations. Mm-hmm. It's a very interesting show. And really, what I thought was so, one of the things I thought was so great about it is it really helped you suspend disbelief. I felt like I was seeing stuff that happened a long time ago.
That's
it
great.
Really transported very, very effectively. So you knew about the show, I assume, either before you started going for auditions or after you started watching it and probably saw how good it was. So there's a lot on the line here as you went back for these callbacks, I would imagine.
Well, there was also this on the line. My brother was obsessed with Boardwalk Empire and still is, but that was one of his favorite shows at the time. So when he found out that I was going in for the auditions, he literally told me that if I don't get this part, then I don't get to come back home. So, and there was a piece of him that was probably very serious.
He was only part kidding, yes.
He was only maybe a quarter kidding.
And when you got the job, my understanding is the thought was it was just going to be a background singer?
Yeah, I thought that it was just going to be a day player role, that I was going to be there for a couple days and then I was going to be out. I definitely did not think that I was going to have, spoiler alert if anybody didn't watch, if I was going to have a love affair with Chalky and take his family away and go into this and have the background with Jeffrey. Like, I mean, everything just that was all just happening as it happened.
So let me just fill in some of those details there. Chalky White is the sort of top of the criminal food chain in the African American community,
right,
in Atlantic City,
right,
where Boardwalk Empire takes place. And he's a married man with kids.
Mm-hmm.
You come into town and start performing at his club, the Onyx Club.
Yes.
And he falls in love with you.
Yes.
But the complicating factor is you're, this is probably a nice way to put it, agent, who's Dr. Narcisse.
Right.
Played by Jeffrey
Wright.
And Chalky is played by Michael K. Williams.
Yes.
Two brilliant, brilliant actors.
Right.
And I want to talk about Michael specifically in a minute. So Dr. Narcisse is your agent / handler who also happens to have killed your mom.
Right.
And
he's my keeper.
And is your keeper and beats you and psychologically abuses you. So it's a
right.
pretty toxic.
It's a very light role.
Not at all. Not at all. So you go in, you think you're going to do a day player role. Mm-hmm. At what point does it dawn on you that actually you've got a big role?
Luckily, it didn't until maybe 8 episodes in.
8 episodes in?
Yeah. I really didn't have much chance to think about it, because which I'm really lucky, because as I told you before, I get really anxious, and if I would have known the size of that role, I definitely would have put it on such a pedestal that I probably would have screwed it up for myself.
You did not screw it up. Let me just say that.
Thanks.
You nailed it. So did the producers and the writers of the show know without telling you that it was going to be a big role, or were they so sort of enamored by you that they grew the role because they started to like you?
I honestly don't know. At the time, my agents weren't really, they weren't really filled in with what was going on. Everybody was kind of, I think it was a fluke. I don't know. I really didn't know what was happening. Nobody really did until I got the scripts for the following episodes the next week and the next week. And then I kept reading and I was like, wow, she's in this episode again. She's in this episode again. Oh, she's in this episode. Okay, that's weird. And then I would read the scripts and I was like, oh man, these are, okay, my talking part is getting bigger. oh man, I have a really big scene with Michael coming up. Oh crap, I have a really big scene with Jeffrey coming up. So it was like all of these things that just kept building, and I was totally caught by surprise. But the good thing was, so when I would get the scripts, or I would get notice to put myself on hold for the following week again, we'd get the scripts. But then as soon as the scripts would come in, then I would get a call from the music supervisor saying, you need to come in and I need, you know, five of these songs to be recorded. Can you come in maybe tomorrow or the next day? So I would work on the recordings on my own with Vince Giordano, who also still plays in New York with Vince Giordano and the Nighthawks. And they were the Boardwalk band, and they had been a band for 9 years prior to Boardwalk, and they still are. But we would go over the key of the song, just the two of us on the phone, and then I would go into the studio and record all these songs, and we would do them in different ways, and then we would do outros, and we would do them sped up, and then we would do them in different keys and just play with them and work on that. And then by the time I was done with that, then I would have to go in for a costume fitting, and then I would be back on set. So that would take up my whole week. So even if I wasn't filming with Boardwalk, every day of the week, I was doing something Boardwalk or something Daughter. So I really didn't have much of a chance to think about it other than just work on the scenes with my acting coach and get the dialect as best as I possibly could down, and then just kind of get in there and get it done, and then it would be the following week. So
none of that confusion and anxiety and the need for a coach to get the dialect right, none of that is perceptible to the viewer. Which is incredible. And I actually read an interview you did with Rolling Stone where you said that the first scene where you walk on stage at the Onyx Club, you're wearing a big fur coat.
Yeah.
And that you were shaking under it.
I was shaking really bad. Shaking really bad. But it was so heavy, it held me down. So, and my ankles are so weak. I just shake all the time. I shake all the time. But I got really nervous. Obviously, Jeffrey Wright is standing right in front of me, and I had to look as stoic as possible. And like, it didn't, you know, like it didn't matter. I was like, oh. Where's the dressing room, you know? And like, it just blew it off. And I was so terrified. You know, you have Michael Kay right here, and you have Jeffrey behind me, and Terrence Winter is just walking around, and, you know.
He's the creator of the show.
He's the creator of the show. And it was just, it was so overwhelming. But thankfully, I had a big fox jacket on, and it was real. It was vintage, and it was holding me down, and I just walked away.
Good for you. Not so good for the fox, but
yeah,
good for you.
Yeah, not so good for the fox.
Wait, no. Was this premeditation?
This was premeditation, yes. I wish I would have known more about it then, because I definitely needed it at some point.
It's never too late. Yeah. Michael K. Williams, I've talked about my TV obsession. My favorite show of all time is The Wire.
Hmm.
And I got a chance to interview Michael a couple of years ago when The Wire was still on the air. I walked through Harlem with him, and people were rolling down their windows screaming,
oh,
Omar.
That's great.
And he's President Obama said that Michael K. Williams was his favorite character. He's an incredible character in that show. He plays sort of a emotionally complicated gay hitman.
Yeah.
Super radical role to be playing. And then he's gone on to have this amazing career, and he plays Chalky White in Boardwalk. This is a long way of me saying I'm going to ask the question that I always hate when interviewers ask actors this question, because it just seems like
bring
such
it
a
on.
Cliche question, but what was it like to work with Michael K. Williams?
It was horrible. No, he's so wonderful and so kind and sweet and nice. And there's something that I learned from Michael, which I take with me. So he would walk around with his big Beats on, his big headphones, and he would literally just always walk through the set with these big, massive headphones on. And I would just say, like, Michael, like, what are you know? And he was like, just waved and just kind of just like a knowingly wave. And I was like, okay, that's weird, but whatever, do your thing. And then one day I was on set, and I was between the music supervisors, and I was doing a dance scene with about 350 extras, and it was like 12 dancers behind me, and it was like this big club scene. And the dancers were practicing, and the choreographer was trying to grab me, and then the second AD was saying, you know, Margo, we need you over here. And then I was finishing up a scene with Jeffrey, and I was like walking through the scene with that, and we were marking that scene. But then directly after that, we were going to go into the big club scene, and I still didn't stretch yet, and I had been like and I had been on set since 5 a.m.
Stretch?
Because we were going to go into a dancing scene.
Ah, I see, okay.
And it's very important to stretch your body before you start dancing, because okay. You can pull something down. Okay. It's really important.
Don't want to pull a hammy.
Don't want to pull a hammy.
That's why I never dance.
You definitely don't, especially the first take in, because then you still got 25 after that,
yes.
Or some. So I needed to stretch, and nothing was happening, and I was just getting pulled in so many different ways, and everybody was talking, and somebody on, and one of the extras had made a comment to me on set and really got me upset. And I was so upset at a certain point, Michael saw me and he just pointed at his headphones and he said, I was like, oh, I get it. Now I get it. You just throw them on and you just zone out. So that was his own zoning out. And now sometimes I do steal a little bit of Michael K and take him with me and throw on some headphones, not massive beat ones like he has, but yeah, it's just something that I like to do.
He's a pretty incredible guy.
He's a pretty incredible guy.
So we talked about this a little bit, but you have this role. You're playing this person with just who's experienced so much trauma, you know, in the thrall of this psychopath who had killed your mom, and in the middle of this really complex love affair with a married man. Can you leave that on stage, or does that come home with you when you're playing that kind of role?
I was lucky enough to learn from a great instructor through my high school, and I continue to work with him. He's still based out of Pittsburgh, Billy Hartung. And that was one of the main practices that he taught me, was to leave your personal at home and leave your work at work. So that was something that I left at Steiner Studios, which is where we shot out in Brooklyn. And I left all of the drama and things with Narcisse and Chalky at the studio. Unfortunately, I took a lot of daughter back home with me, but I guess it wasn't unfortunate because I still needed to work on her and I still needed to create her. But there were different pieces of Margot that was meshed with daughter as I kind of like walked through my days off, and I could feel it. And at the time I was living in Harlem, and so it really, really rung true to me. There was something that was really kind of starting to become alive inside of me. So that was a different side of me that I experienced, and even just the way that I would walk or the way that I would wear certain clothes or certain things that I would say. I would catch myself, you know, talking to some friends and I'd be like, oh gosh, guys, and I'd be like, I'm sorry, what? What'd you just say? I'm like, oh, never mind. Just kidding.
That was not me.
That was 1920. So there were little things like that that would kind of come out at really random times. But other than like the really harsh things that were going on in my mind, I really tried to leave them at home, because I don't think that that's healthy to bring them home with you.
No, it's certainly not healthy. The question is whether it's a hard thing to do.
Yeah, sometimes it's really hard to not shut it off. And there definitely took me some nights that I needed some extra time alone, or I needed to stay up for another couple hours before I could fall asleep. But I just really made it a promise to myself not to fall asleep with that in my mind.
I'm really interested in the ways in which meditation can play out in a competitive, stressful life, and you certainly have that. And there was a really interesting quote that you gave to Rolling Stone about Louis Gossett Jr., who is in one of the Boardwalk Empire episodes.
Mm-hmm.
And you said, and this is a long quote, I'll just read it, "He was the most gracious man, and you would think that he just started acting yesterday. Just by the way that he would present himself, he was so nonchalant and very friendly. That's exactly the type of actor that I want to be. Someone that can be respected and so respectful and so humble. As soon as the camera turned on, he pulled you in, and it was just the easiest thing to act with him because he just steps your game up so much more. He makes other people look amazing. To be an actor that can really highlight and elevate everyone else's performance just because of their own, what an incredible talent." It just struck me, that quote leapt out at me as the kind of thing that meditation could help you with.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I mean, I still definitely stand behind that. I don't know if he meditates. I don't know what his practice is or what his daily routine is.
He just may be a special dude.
He just may be an incredible man, and he definitely is, regardless of whatever his practice is. But the way that he made me feel, the ease that he brought to set with him, I think that was really special. And I think that definitely, I think meditation would bring that ease for myself, and I wouldn't have to depend off of someone else to bring that on set. I now, thankfully, with experience, I don't I don't depend on anybody else to bring me comfort. But there was definitely a time during Boardwalk that comfort was needed, so, and appreciated.
But I can imagine for you being so young and having all this success happen pretty suddenly and then being thrown into this world where there are, I'm sure, some pretty complex people that you have to deal with off camera and on, that keeping your head in the midst of all of that must have been and still be a challenge.
It definitely is. I'm really lucky with the group of friends that I have around me. It's a very small group. I know a lot of people, but the people that I really consider to be my closest are really, really grounded folks. And I'm really lucky that I'm very close with my family, and they definitely keep me grounded. If there's any sighting of like me flying off or becoming something else, then
like
they
diva.
Definitely they,
yeah.
The D word, the diva.
Yeah, yeah.
Then they definitely pull me back. And my boyfriend is actually from Pittsburgh, so he's very home to me. So I think that there's something about coming from a blue collar town that, you know, that was just kind of the work ethic that we had. I'm lucky enough that the career that I've had and the success of my career has kind of fallen on the later side of my teens and 20s. So I think if it would have been a little bit earlier in life, I don't know if I would have been ready for that. But because of the struggle, and though you said it's happened really overnight, I've really been working professionally for about 15 years. I mean, I started in music when I was 14 years old.
Didn't feel overnight to you.
Definitely was not overnight to me. And I was singing in bars at 15, 16, doing local gigs and not singing in bars to make it sound like, oh, I'm singing in bars. But because that was those were the music venues that I got a chance to play. And literally I was playing venues that they wouldn't even let me sit in the green room because I was leaving high school and coming to the gig, and I was selling out these shows in Pittsburgh, and I couldn't even sit in the club because I wasn't even 18 yet. So my band would sit in there, and then I would stand outside and get ready to sing on stage. I mean, it's crazy. Like when I think about it now, it's like, I don't know how I just didn't walk out, but because of all of those experiences, I've only known this world. And though there's definitely things that are adding to the world of the creative arts that I've always known, and different parts like doing interviews with people like you and doing TV spots and doing features and people now stopping me in the street, those are all things that are adding to everything that I've practiced and everything that I've worked really hard for. But that's not what I set out to do. What I set out to do was that I wanted to do my artistry, and that's something that I've been working on for a long time. So though this is definitely a world that I'm not really used to, I just kind of take that practice of where I came from and knowing that I just need to continue to do better work and continue to do more and more work and work that I'm proud of. And I think that that's what kind of grounds me.
I want to talk about some of the stuff you've done after Boardwalk. As we sit here on this day, as we have this discussion, I believe it's opening day for the latest Barbershop.
Yeah, it opened last night,
okay.
But officially it's open to the rest of the world.
And I read a really positive review in the New York Times.
Oh, did you?
Yes.
I haven't read the review.
Yes, very good review. Very good review by A.O. Scott, who's a tough reviewer. So how do you feel? I mean, have you seen it yet?
I've seen it twice now.
Uh-huh. Were you happy with it?
I was very happy with it. It's incredible. It's super funny. It talks about community, and it has a lot of love in it. You can laugh and cry and do everything, and there's many different characters that you can somewhere relate to, and on some level. And I think it's really fun. It's really, really fun.
Well, I've no doubt that it's fun and funny, but it's really coming out at a potent moment in the national dialogue.
Absolutely.
Around violence and race. And as I understand it, the movie goes there.
It does. Yeah. I actually didn't know. So obviously we know what we film because we're in there filming. We got the script, but there are still things that are kind of tailored along the way of shooting something. It's just naturally kind of molds to whatever is happening. So there's a lot of the scenes with the kids and Cube's kids and
Ice Cube's kids.
Ice Cube's kids. A lot of those scenes we weren't a part of, so I didn't really know what was happening. But once I saw the movie, there was definitely a moment that I was like, oh my God, like they go there. Like they are showing guns, they are showing like true colors and this is gang world, this is that life. And it scared me a little bit, but it's something that I'm really happy that they took the risk to actually fully go there. And I think that there's so much exposed in today's society because of all of the media outlets, and there's so much that kids see. And to be able to have a great platform and a voice like Ice Cube does and the other people associated in the movie, and to actually talk on some issues that we have to and that people are scared to talk about, and then make them loving and caring and actually make a point to say that things need to change. I think that was I was really proud to be a part of something like that, which I didn't think Barbershop was going to be.
Yeah, I was frankly a little surprised. I hadn't yet, actually, I'll admit, I hadn't seen any of the previous ones, but the review was glowing, mm-hmm. unambivalent. And I would be fired by my employer if I didn't ask you about the show that you're doing right now called The Family, which airs on ABC.
Yes, ABC Sunday nights.
ABC Sunday nights?
Sunday nights at 9.
And to just tell us what it's about and who you are on the show.
So the show premise is about a kid that goes missing in a murder and kidnapping case 10 years ago.
In Maine. Yes.
And shows up 10 years later. And the person, I played the detective on the show at the time when the case was first, when it first happened, I was a rookie cop. And I became a detective because of the success of the case and me putting away someone for the murder and kidnapping of this child. And when he comes back 10 years later, obviously the person that I put away for his murder and kidnapping is not the right person. And the kidnapper is still out there. He's obviously not murdered. And the wrong person is in jail. So I definitely have to eat my words.
Except for there are questions about whether the kid is actually the kid.
Again, spoiler alert, if you've watched or if you haven't watched, we do know now that the actual kid. So that question is answered. That's one of the most amazing things about the show, and the things that the writers do so well with this show is you watch shows all the time and you're constantly watching for the next episode and the next, and you're waiting for the answers and you're like, oh my God, when are they going to get to it? I just want to know, is the kid or what's happening? And The Family tells you, like, we tell you the answers. We tell you who the pockmarked man is. We tell you who the kidnapper is. Literally, we show him making a new bunker for another kid that he's about to go kidnap. And it definitely goes there to that dark place, and you can't tell us that we're not giving you answers. Are there more questions that come up every single week? Absolutely. That's what makes a good TV show.
I mean, this show comes right out of Shondaland. Her team know what they're doing.
Right. But this is Jenna Band's first really steerheading her own success, and I'm so proud of her. And she does an unbelievable job, obviously, with the association of the other writers that have done an incredible job. But it's definitely the Shonda world, but this is the Jenna Band's land.
Good for Jenna, and good for you. What is next for you?
Well, there's a couple projects that are in the works right now that I can't talk about.
Can't talk about. Are you going to be in the next Star Wars?
Oh, man. JJ would kill me. No, I wish. But I have a love for the comic world and for the alien world and sci-fi world. So that's something that I would love to kind of venture in with. There's nothing coming up as far as that goes, but there's definitely some exciting projects that I just recently signed on to that will be announced.
Anything in which you sing?
Yes, actually.
Okay. All right.
Yes.
Cool.
I had to think about that. Yes, the next one is a singing role.
It always strikes me when you're not singing that it's a waste of your talent.
Thank you very much.
I wish you nothing but success.
Thanks, Dan.
And continued mindfulness and meditation.
Thank you.
Check out that app I told you about.
Right.
Although you can't
10%
you
happier.
Can't go wrong with Headspace. They do a phenomenal job. Whatever meditation you do.
Something tells me I might like your app a little bit. Something about
maybe.
That voice.
Yeah. Well, no, you won't have to listen. I won't actually do the meditations. I'll just do the trash talking before
great.
The meditation. So you don't have to. My voice, I think, would be a little annoying. Although I did actually do. I'm not a meditation teacher, so I try not to pretend I am.
Sure.
But my wife asked me to make her a custom meditation, which I thought
that's so cool.
I thought it was crazy. Like, I would imagine your husband's voice would actually just stress you out, but she uses it.
Oh, I think that's lovely.
Make all sorts of inappropriate jokes in there.
That's awesome. And I mean, there's no judgments there because she's your other half, so that's great.
No, there's plenty of judgment. Let me assure you. I'm not judging her.
Sure.
well, anyway, I hope that she skips this podcast. Love you, Bianca. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having
me. It was such a pleasure
me.
To meet you.
You
do
too.
Amazing work. I'm really glad to meet you in person.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to today's show. You can find video of the episode and an article about it at abcnews.com. Thanks, as always, to the producers of the show, Lauren Efron, Josh Cohen, Sarah Amos, and Dan Silver. You can hit me on Twitter at Dan B. Harris anytime you like. If you liked the episode today and you want to hear more like it, you can subscribe to the podcast, rate it, and leave a review. Thank you for that, and we'll talk to you next week.
If you like 10% Happier, and I hope you do, you can listen early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music. Before you go, tell us about yourself by filling out a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
For more than two centuries, the White House has been the stage for some of the most dramatic scenes in American history. Inspired by the hit podcast American History Tellers, Wondery and William Morrow present the new book, The Hidden History of the White House. Each chapter will bring you inside the fierce power struggles, the world-altering decisions, and shocking scandals that have shaped our nation. You'll be there when the very foundations of the White House are laid in 1792, and you'll watch as the British burn it down in 1814. Then you'll hear the intimate conversations between FDR and Winston Churchill as they make plans to defeat Nazi forces in 1941. And you'll be in the Situation Room when President Barack Obama approves the raid to bring down the most infamous terrorist in American history. Pre-order The Hidden History of the White House now in hardcover or digital editions wherever you get your books.
I'm Shimon Yai, and I have a new podcast called The Competition. Every year, 50 high school senior girls compete in a massive scholarship competition.
I wouldn't say I have an ego problem, but I'm extremely competitive.
All of the competitors are used to being the best and the brightest, and they're all vying for a huge cash prize.
This will probably be the most intense thing you've ever gone through in your life.
I remember that feeling because I was one of them. I lost. But now I'm coming back as a judge and also a kind of teen girl anthropologist. Because if you want to understand what it's like to be a young woman in America today, The Competition's not a bad place to start.
Hopefully no one will die on stage tonight.
From Pineapple Street Studios and Wondery, this is The Competition. Follow The Competition on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to The Competition early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.